Yeah, I'm stepping in for Brian today. Friday morning, we were having this conversation, and it started with kind of some criticism of Brian about extending his sabbatical with some kind of little shoulder surgery, and then it went on into a few more serious things with the conversation with him about, let us take this for you this morning. And as Doyle commented, we're a little worried about any theology that he might bring under the influence. I was a little worried that his speech might be slowed, thus creating a situation where we might need to reenact the feeding of the 5,000, and not sure that we could pull that off, because I'm not sure Gary Boyette would have shared his snacks with us in order to do that. And so then we went to the decision of, well, who's going to preach? And it's Craig and Doyle and I, and I offered to trade places with any of them. But Craig was very concerned that I might kill his technology if I took that spot, and Doyle was afraid I might kill the church if I led worship. So here's where I am today. This is the role that I can at least try to fill. We're at that place where there's the vacation season. And when you start to say the vacation season, that seems like a time of rest and relaxation. Seems like a time where people could kind of tone it down a notch and relax a little bit. And yet my experience in watching people is that actually the reverse takes place during this vacation season. No show of hands, because your kids might be sitting here. How many of you moms already have the first day of school circled on your calendar? And why is that? How many of you have vacations planned for the next couple of months? And how will it look the week before? How many of you will work fast and furiously to clear the inbox before you leave so that you're tired when you leave? And then you only have this certain length of time, so you have to make sure that you cram everything into it that you possibly can so that you come home more tired than you left. And you walk back to your office saying, glad I'm back to work where I can get some rest. But you have some great pictures, right? We've gotten caught in this culture of being fast and hurrying. And you know, I say all the time that I want calm and I want peace. And yet if you looked at my calendar and you watched me live for a while, you would see that I'm the one who makes decisions that are very contrary to creating the lifestyle that I say that I want. How does that happen? You know what this is. I've never used a prop, and it's Haley's, and so I'm going to set it in a safe place when I'm done. You know what this is? It's a snow globe. And you shake it up and it does all kinds of neat things. And I know you can't see it from a distance, but you know what it's doing. And as I sit there and watch, and I watch it settle, I wonder, in your life, where are you more comfortable? Are you more comfortable in that? Or are you more comfortable in the calm that will settle? Some of you may know that Karen and I, about a month ago, went on a minister's wives renewal retreat. And I hesitate to talk about that because I know how I feel when somebody goes away on a retreat and comes back and they're all excited and they're bubbly and they want to tell you all about it. And what I want to tell them is, just give it 6 months. Don't talk to me about it now, but in 6 months, if you're still excited about it, come back and talk to me and I'll believe that it was really life-changing. I want to tell you this morning that that was life-changing for me. And I want to share a little bit of that journey with you this morning as we talk about the idea of being still and resting. That week was a week of forced, guided stillness. And I'll have to be honest with you, I've never done that in my life. Now, nobody would ever call me hyperactive or anything like that, but being still and quiet is not something that I'm comfortable with. And honestly, it took about 3 days for me to realize I had no place to be, nothing to do, and no responsibility. And once I got to that place, I learned a few things about myself that were really powerful. The first thing I realized was just how tired I really was. Just how tired I had allowed myself to get, and feeling angry and guilty that all of that tiredness and fatigue was of my own doing. I had created that. The second thing that I came to realize was how scared I was to slow down. How afraid I was of stopping or slowing down, that something would pass me or catch me, or that I wouldn't get to where God wanted me to be. And the anxiety, it's the only word I can use, the anxiety that that produces in me. And the third thing that I was forced to realize was how everything I had ever prayed about in our work, God had honored and more. And yet for some reason it wasn't enough. There were still more things to accomplish. There were still more things to do. There was still more ground to take before Brad could ever rest. How can that be? How does that happen to us? I don't think I'm alone. But if I am, just indulge me. How does that happen to us? I want to leave that story for a minute, but I want to come back to it. This morning, I don't want to talk about our busyness. We can talk about that, and we do talk about it all the time. And talking about our busyness is almost too easy, because I can give you a little guilt and you'll take it, because that kind of makes us feel good in some way. And then we'll rush out of here in a few minutes and we'll run to lunch to beat somebody to lunch because we got to eat in a hurry because we have some place to be after lunch. And I don't want to do that this morning. This morning I'm going to ask you a little different question. The question I have for you this morning is, when are you still? When are you still? And if you're not, how do we ever hear the still, quiet voice of God if we're never still? Psalm chapter 46, verse 10. I believe David gives us two of the most difficult commands in all of Scripture for this culture. He tells us, number one, to be still. And he tells us, number two, to know that I am God. What does it mean to be still? How many of us would have to be incapacitated to be still? Brian? Oh, just kidding. See an honest show of hands. For how many of us does being still sound like either laziness or lack of motivation? Anybody? What if we came to the realization that God's stillness is neither of those? And what if it's not even as much a physical thing as it is a mindset? How many of us have at least 5 time management resources, either in our library or our office or somewhere at our disposal that we've purchased? How many of you have at least 5 of those? If you've got an iPhone or a BlackBerry, you've got 5 in 1, okay? So there you go. Let me ask you, even if it's made your life more efficient, has it made your life more peaceful? Or has it just allowed you to more efficiently try to do more things? The time management industry is a multi-billion-dollar industry. And it's been out there for a long time, and I don't see it producing any peace. I see it producing a lot of work. I'm afraid we may have over-glamorized the idea of the self-made man. The daybreak to dusk work ethic, even at church. Think about it. Who do we ask to do things at church? We even have a little saying for it. Ask the busy person. They're the ones who will get it done. Right? And the busy person is also the insane person who always says yes. We know who to ask. We don't like the fact that 20% of the people will do 80% of the work, but we continue the cycle of that by asking the same people to do it because we want it done and we know they will do it. What does our lack of stillness say about our faith that God will provide? And what might we learn if we were ever to be still for any significant period of time? One thing we might learn is that we are finite beings and that God is infinite. One thing we might learn is that anything of any lasting value will be done by God, and He might use us to do His work, but make no mistake, it will be His work. And He will only choose us and we will only see His work in our lives if we will be still long enough to allow Him to show it to us. I wonder if there aren't great plans being laid out that we've just missed because we're too busy. Most of us have a desire to leave a legacy of some kind, to do some work that will last beyond us, that will allow us to be remembered beyond our life, that we do something significant. What if we stopped to realize that any lasting work will be done in line with God's mission for our lives? But we will have to be still to hear what He has to offer us. The second thing we might learn if we were ever still is that He's with us. It's interesting in that Psalm 46 that verse 7 and 11 are exactly the same. David writes, "The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress." And then he repeats it again in verse 11. Same thing. "The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress." I'm sad to confess this morning that most of my life has been lived in such a way that I could not feel the presence of God. Not because He wasn't there, but because I was too busy running ahead of Him. You know, the fortress that He provides is of no use to us if we're not still enough, long enough, to see it. Maybe I've been running so fast to try to prove my value, or prove myself, prove my worth, to get out of the minor leagues, whatever it might be, to even notice that the presence of God is here, and to take advantage of the fortress that He's trying to provide me. The second command in Psalm 46, verse 10 says, "Know that I am God." And I wonder if for us today, maybe more important than knowing that He is God would be for us to know that we are not God. You know, we have limits. In Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 through 13, I believe that when Paul said he could do everything through Him who gave him strength, the context of that passage was not that he could do anything in the world, but that Paul could learn to be content in any circumstance, whether in want or in plenty, whether he was hungry or well fed, he was content. Why? Because God would give him everything he needed. And because he had practiced that confidence in God long enough, he believed that. So that he could be very comfortable in any circumstance. His strength that he received from God would not allow him to change his circumstances or to deny his circumstances, but it would allow him to have peace and contentment. in any circumstance. How many of us are looking for those things? And it leads me to wonder, if what I'm doing is never enough, who's providing the strength? Who's really God in my life? If we're being really honest, I wonder how many of us have convinced ourselves that something less than God would satisfy us. We wouldn't say it that way, but the evidence of our lives clearly shows and betrays us sometimes. You know, when we accomplish that one big thing with God's help and praying for His support and praying in His name and all those things, of course, but that when we've accomplished that one big thing, we will feel good about ourselves and we'll be content, we will be finished, and we will be able to rest. Have you noticed that the thrill of those big things, those accomplishments, never lasts for very long? Have you ever noticed that when you buy that dream car or that dream house, that the new wears off? That when you get to do that thing you've always dreamed you wanted to do, that the thrill of it, while great for a moment, doesn't last forever? Why is that? What if it's because God never wants us to confuse a counterfeit for the real source of peace and joy, which is simply just being with Him? Please hear this in the spirit that I intended. We have been blessed to do more things in more really neat places in the Haley Project over the last 10 years than I would have ever dreamed or imagined when we got started. And I'm sad to admit that those things have become incredibly burdensome to me. Why? The initial rush always wears off. There's always another accomplishment. One thing always reveals another thing. And something else is always needed to sustain that feeling. And the realization that I came to in the process of being still for a week is that I've spent most of my life telling God what I wanted. And I know that that's a very biblical concept. He tells us to ask and He'll provide. But I've spent almost all of my life, in my prayer life, talking to God and telling Him and asking for His blessing of the things that I wanted to do. I believe that if we search Scripture long enough, we would find Him telling us to be still and quiet and to listen. Way more than He tells us to talk. And the greatest lesson that I learned in my week of quiet is that He really wants me to just shut up and listen. And then He'll show me what He wants me to do. And operating that way, rather than trying to cram Him into my plan, will bring the things that I've been chasing for so long. You know, I've heard a lot of sermons in my life about Jesus facing the temptations of Satan in the desert. And I've heard a lot of sermons about the story before that, in Matthew chapter 3, where He's being baptized. And I've heard, but the stories have never been tied together for me. And I wonder if those two stories fit perfectly together. Before Jesus enters the desert, look at what He's sent with from His Father. As soon as Jesus was baptized, He went up out of the water. At that moment, heaven was opened and He saw the Spirit of God descending on Him like a dove and lighting on Him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my Son whom I love. With Him I am well pleased." You know what the cool thing about that is to me? At this moment in Jesus' life, he's done nothing. He hadn't done a miracle. He hasn't performed a healing. He hadn't been to the cross yet. He's done nothing, and yet his Father says, I love you and I'm proud of you. Do you think those words and that thought in his head going into the desert might have had an impact on him when Satan is tempting him, challenging his identity with things of the world that would be valuable to any of us? And Jesus stands strong because he knows he is God's Son. He knows what his Father thinks of him. And that's enough for him. In similar ways, I believe God has done the same thing to us. He said the same things. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that anyone who would believe in him would not perish but have everlasting life. God demonstrated his love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. What more does he have to do? What more can he say to convince us that we're loved not because of what we do or don't do, but because he's our Father? But the way I live most of the time is evidence that I don't really believe that. Still trying to do something to repay the debt or prove myself worthy, which sucks all of the joy out of anything I do, no matter how much glory it might bring to God. I want to close with this. What would have happened if Adam and Eve had just accepted their limits? What if they had just done the work that God invited them to be a part of and just enjoyed the fruits of their labor? What if they had responded to the serpent? But we're not God. I don't know about you, but my ego is pretty easily inflated. I have larger fantasies and wishes and dreams and desires for myself than my real life abilities could ever support. And as a result of that, I work more and more frantically trying to do more and more than God intended me to do. And wonder why I find myself on the side of the road burning out. Robert Barron wrote that at the heart of our sinful nature is the refusal to accept God's rhythm for our lives. The essence of being in God's image is our ability, like God, to stop. For many of us, being still and letting God be God may be as tough a commandment as there is given in Scripture. But until we find those things, I don't believe we'll ever find the peace and the joy that he's promised us. If our elders and shepherds and ministers will move around to wherever they're going to go today, this morning I want to invite you to think about this. What might change in your life if we took the chance to be still and trust God to be God of your life? What might change? What if we tried to live by the words of Paul to the Romans in chapter 12 and verse 2? Not conforming to the patterns of the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. I love the way the Message says that. It says, so here's what I want you to do. God helping you, take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you as the best thing you can do for Him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what He wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, which always drags you down to its level of maturity, God brings the best out of you. You believe that? If you're here this morning and you need to respond to that in some way, there are men and women scattered around this building that would love to talk to you and pray with you and journey with you as we seek the will of God. If you have any need at all, please come while we sing.